Mike, for taking the time today to come on the podcast. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's kind of funny because usually I'm on podcasts about investing and I don't talk too much about my business, so it's going to be different for myself.
That's great. Mike, for our listeners that may not recognize you, why don't you start off, please introduce yourself and a bit about your company.
So my name is Mike Héroux. I'm also known as the Dividend Guy. So I run on all the platforms. So I have the Dividend Guy blog, I have the Dividend Guy podcast, and the YouTube channel as well. But my main business is Dividend Stocks Rock, also known as DSR for short, where we help people invest with more conviction so they can enjoy their retirement. So the point is not to provide advice, but rather provide all the tools autonomous investors need to, of course, build their portfolio with a focus on dividend growth investing. A few years later, I created Retirement Loop, as I kind of saw a good segue between both, where if you want to take care of your portfolio, it's probably because you don't want to deal with a financial advisor. So when it comes down to retirement planning, well, you have similar questions, but you don't want to go back to an advisor, and you certainly don't want to go back to mutual funds if you want to manage your portfolio. So we decided to create, and I used to be a financial planner for like 10 years before doing all this. So maybe we can get there in a second. So I decided to create a similar platform where we help people building their retirement plan. We provide the support, we provide the software, we have like webinars and so on, so people can actually know for sure that they can retire, which kind of budget, especially with all the market fluctuation that we have over the past few years. It's one thing to put money aside and invest when you are in the growth phase, but when you are in the decumulation phase, all new kind of questions arise. Tax optimization is, of course, a big part of that. So we are just like coming full circle, where we help people in their growth phase, and then we help them, and not necessarily for dividend growth investors, but just Canadians in general, build their portfolio, manage their retirement plan, and know exactly where they're going to be going in this journey.
And how long has DSR been around?
I created DSR in 2013. So the story here is, when I finished my bachelor degree in finance and marketing, I started a side gig. So I was working at National Bank. I actually worked there for 13 years. And on the side, I started to blog about personal finance, and eventually discovered that I could buy and sell blogs and make money out of that, kind of like flipping real estate, but that was like just flipping websites. And eventually ended up buying the Dividend Guy blog in 2010. And the same guy came to my partner and I and say, hey, I've built this infrastructure, like the whole website with the membership and stuff, called Dividend Stocks Rock, but I don't have the time to open it, run it, and take care of like any members or anything. So we decided to buy, it was just like an empty shell, basically, just all the licensing products. But we thought, hey, it's nice because now we're making money with advertisement, but let's create more a sustainable business with a recurring membership-based revenue. So we started this, again, as a side business. I had, when I launched, I probably had around like 175 members. That was in 2013. And then 2016 happened. And my wife at that time was, she had a daycare at home. So literally working from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. She was getting a bit tired of that, of course. And then she said, yeah, I read a blog about a family of three like us. So I have like two boys and one girl. And she said, they are on a biking trip, a cycling trip, all the way down to Mexico. And I'm like, yeah, I'm on to take a sabbatical. I'm on to travel the world on the bicycle with three kids between age of like 4 and 10. Not too sure about that part. So we revisited that plan and decided to actually buy an RV, a small RV, a Class C, like with the bunk beds, and decided to travel across North America and Central America. So we ended up in Costa Rica. We traveled for one full year, do homeschooling and everything. And it was the best year of my life. I mean, spending 24 hours, 7 days a week with the person that you love all the time. It was just amazing. And during that period, I asked myself, I was turning 35 during that trip. I asked myself, what do I want to do in life? And I had a really good job as a private banker back then. And, you know, kind of like the golden handcuff. I love my job. I was good at it. But the problem is, I always wanted to start my business. And every single time I was about to do so and go full time on that side gig that was like DSR and the blogs, I was always offered a promotion or I had a good bonus. And I was like, yeah, well, I cannot quit that job. I mean, six figures, pension plan, the whole shebang. And eventually I realized during that trip that life is short. I mean, shocker, right? And then eventually I'm going to wake up one day. I'll be, I don't know, like 50 or 60, and it will be too late. And I will deeply regret not trying it. So when we came back in 2017, big discussion with my wife, of course, with the children. Because, I mean, of course, that time, I mean, I did not have any money left, right? I spent everything on the trip. So when I came back, we rented our house. So we got our house back. So that was a good thing. But I did not even have enough money in my bank account. That was like July 1st when we got the house back. I didn't have enough money to pay the mortgage for August. Wow. And I still decided to quit my job nonetheless and do full time. A lot of pressure, of course, because then I was like down to working like 12, 14 hours a day and like just trying to make money out of that like quickly. And yeah, so fast forward today, DSR now has about 4,000 members, and Retirement Loop that was launched in December of 24 has over 500 members as well. So active community, a lot of like engaged investors, and now I'm having a lot of fun running this. Not always easy, of course, but that was pretty much where I went in a nutshell.
And Mike, how many years did it take you, or months, when you committed full time to where you were able to maybe not replace your old income, but make enough that you could sleep well at night, as I like to say?
So at first, what I did in 2017 was that I was building DSR. But at first, I mean, the main advantage of a recurring membership is every year, once it's built, you're making money. Like, we're recording this podcast. My son is buzzing right now telling me that I'm making payments. I mean, it's just amazing. You feel like you're making money, whatever you do in life, right? But at the beginning, the problem is you run a campaign, you get like 50 new members. So you get a nice month of September, but then you have to wait another 11 months before you're getting paid again. So at first I started writing for Seeking Alpha, a US-based website on stock analysis. So I was doing stock analysis for them, getting paid by the article to make sure that I was barely making enough to live. But what happened is throughout 2018 and 19, I was almost breaking even, sometimes borrowing money, a little bit of like love money at this point. But I was prepared for that. I had like my RSP that were there, and I told my wife, we could live for like 2 years on our RSP. And I mean, that would completely destroy the retirement plan, but at least I could do that before having any other problems. And the concept of fear, once you cross the borders of like Honduras or El Salvador by foot, makes it completely different that, oh, I'm going to lose my house and go bankrupt. I'm not really worried about that anymore. You know, I know I can live with a lot less. So for 2018, 2019, things were getting better, but I was always more focused on revenue growth than just cash flow and profit. My goal was to build something. And then 2020 happened and I was about to get all right. You know, I was like, life was getting good. We had our first trip in Vietnam, like in January of 2020. So we actually took one of the last flights on January 31st to come back home right before it all exploded. Because in Asia, it was already starting to be kind of like scary. Everybody was wearing masks. And then 3 weeks before, it was like nothing of that happened. And then I realized, okay, so if the market crashed and my entire business is about investing, what if people don't want to pay for investment tools anymore because they're too afraid and just, I don't know, they move their money to gold or to just plain cash because they're afraid. So instead, like, I'm a big fan of what you can control in life. So I decided to focus on what I could control. And one thing I could control back then was to give maximum support to my members, because that was, they were like the most important people in my life at that time. Because I mean, if they quit, I'm done. So instead of like, and I remember from my days of like being a certified financial planner and a private banker, when there's a lot of crisis, my first reflex back then was to pick up the phone and call my clients instead of hiding under my desk and hoping for no one to call me. I decided to do one webinar per week, a live Q&A, ask me anything. And I would stand up for like 2 hours, 2 hours and a half every week, all March, all April, until it calmed down. And in the end, it had like completely the opposite effect on my business. Instead of like killing it, it opened the doors. And 2020 was like kind of like the year where it's sometimes you either make it or break it. So at that time, I had enough to that I knew that now I really had a real business. I could grow moving forwards. And after that, I was making more than my private banker's job at the bank after 2020.
Wow. So you really took what could have been a crisis situation and turned it into the opposite, a way to solidify your business through customer service. During that time when you were, over-servicing or really servicing your client base, were you picking up new clients as well? Or were you just kind of holding on to what you had? And once the financial crisis was over, then you started picking up momentum again?
I was doing both, because the beauty of doing those webinars, it was giving me so much content ideas, because I was answering like 75 questions every week. So all those questions, I mean, if someone takes the time to ask you that question, probably that dozens or hundreds of investors have the exact same question. So I was repurposing a lot of that content, just like starting from that idea and say, you know what, I can write a blog about this. I can do a podcast about that or a video and put that on YouTube. So this is where I started to put more content outside, because I mean, the business model is fairly simple. You do a lot of free content so people can start following you. You gain trust, because the thing is, it's not like paying $300-$400 a year to subscribe to a membership that is the risk for the customer. Is can I trust this platform, the tools, and like the newsletters and everything that I'm going to receive to make the right moves? Because if I don't, I'm going to lose like tens of thousands of dollars, So the key here is to build that trust, and you can do that by offering a lot of like good free content. So really classic model where I invite, and I still do the same thing today, I invite people to subscribe to my free newsletters where they get to know me, they get to know my philosophy, and eventually they decide if DSR is a right fit or Retirement Loop, my retirement website, is a good fit for them. And you've experienced the whole process on your side. Yeah. And this is how I was able to see more momentum in 2020, and that continued the years after.
And so what are you doing now to continue that momentum, to continue to grow the business? Is it strictly a content, from a marketing perspective, Mike, is it strictly a content play? Are you spending money on ad campaigns, or is it just pushing out free content?
It's a really good question, as I've reached a plateau, because the beauty with the membership website, as I mentioned earlier, is you're getting notification that you're going to get payments like here and there without even remembering that you ran a campaign 5 years ago. The downside is members are not staying there forever. You have a churn there. You have people that they unsubscribe for plenty of reasons. They change strategy, they grow older, they hire a financial advisor, or whatever reason, it doesn't really matter. But the thing is, now I'm losing about 20% of my members every year, which is actually an 80% renewal rate is actually very good for the industry.
Yeah, for a subscription-based model, that's really high.
Yeah, it's really high. But the thing is, at first, if you have 100 clients, it means that you only need 20 sales to get back to the same revenue. Right. Now I need like the first 700 new sales I'm making in 26 is just to compensate what I'm naturally losing from last year. Right. And so it's not a problem of not having a good service, but it's a problem of like, now I'm hitting this plateau where I need to find new ways to get more people in. So I'm starting to look into paid advertising as another growth vector. But to this date, all the growth was done just organically with a few affiliates. So other financial bloggers in the same niche that I know for a long while, but they don't necessarily have a product around dividend growth investing. So what we do together is we're going to do a webinar for their readers, and all the sales, like all the people that goes to the webinar and register, the affiliate gets a kickback on the other side. So that was like the main growth. So either just organic, people find me on the internet, they subscribe to my newsletter, they watch a webinar, or they just get a promotion or whatever and they decide to subscribe. Or we do the same playbook with affiliate. But right now, the business is going well, but I need to find new ways to get more exposure. Literally, it's just a game of exposure. And it's also quite a challenge, I'm sure, for all the people that you meet on the show, where entrepreneurs must get in front of everybody else on people's screen, on their phones. And the competition is pretty steep. It's pretty hard to get there. So it's a tough game, but I mean, I see it as a game. I like to play.
Well, this is an important distinction, Mike, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, but lately I've been having a lot of conversations with entrepreneurs that are saying, you know what, I've hit this certain level and I'm okay there. I don't need to grow, but I don't want to drop, but I'm okay staying at this level. I've got a good lifestyle. I like my staff that I have. I don't want more people. It seems to be a more common conversation than it was with my fellow entrepreneurs 10 years ago. And I don't know if that's a trend or this is just a too small of a sample size, but how do you feel about that in the people you're talking to? Are you noticing that, or is this just kind of a one-off?
I actually ask myself the same question, but the thing is, and since I come from an investment background, when I see, I do a lot of stock analysis, of course, and when I see a company that is, I see the growth that is slowing down, the problem is most of the time, the following step is no growth, and after that, it's decline. And once you start declining, then, I mean, sometimes, I mean, it's smooth and it just goes really smoothly and you don't have any problems. But some other times, I mean, here comes the dividend cut, the company gets into much debt and now they literally struggling. And because I'm afraid about this part, I don't want to slow down. So it's not a matter of like, I want more money. It's a matter of like, I want to make sure that I can continue doing this because I love doing this for the next 20, 30 years. Actually, I don't want to retire because I love what I do. So maybe one day I'm going to reach that movement now if it declines by 5% a year, I don't really care because my money is made and I'm more interested in just like writing my newsletter every week and doing some webinars, connecting with my members. But for the rest of the time, if I can work like 20 hours a week, I'm going to be super happy. But I'm not there yet. But definitely, it's a tough spot because I don't need more money at this time. It's really about thinking the long game is, if I'm taking a break right now, will it cripple the business moving forward, or will I be okay? And I'm not willing to know the answer just yet.
Well, but plus there's the fact that you're in a unique service. You know, you're what you're doing is, it's a very intimate relationship you have with your members because this is their money.
Yeah.
This is not a casual thing here. In some cases, they're really counting on the information they're getting from you and others that are, especially if they're doing everything themselves, to be able to afford a nice retirement. So yeah, I could see that too. So on top of what you just said, I would imagine that this is a constant, the business you're in, you're constantly having to continually educate yourself. Is that a fair comment?
Oh, totally. I mean, right now I'm digging into AI a lot, of course. And that has been, I mean, I love learning, so it's a good thing because it has been quite a challenge to manage my personal life, the business, and then learning along the way. But I mean, if you don't want to adapt when you have a business, it's going to go bad very fast, in my opinion. So you need to learn what's working today, what's going to be working tomorrow. You need to figure out that part as well. And on top of like always looking at what's going on in the economy and on the stock market and doing stock analysis, I also take notes of like what's going on in the online entrepreneur sphere. I go to conventions as well to make sure that I'm always up to date for those things. But I mean, it's nice because we get to meet a lot of new people as well, create more friends. And it's kind of funny because I, of course, I work like online, like from my house, from my home office for the past 9 years now. But it's always nice to meet people in person and to connect as well. So that's one of the rare part of like being a private banker that I really enjoy, that like real connection. Cause right now I feel this a bit when I do webinars, but of course I'm not providing financial advice. I don't do one-on-one. So I cannot say, hey, Pat, here's what you should be doing with your portfolio. I used to do that, but now that's a line that I cannot cross. Regulators are really adamant about this. And I mean, I've been a banker for like 13 years. So I really know how if you cross the wrong lines in compliancy, that's going to be a huge problem. So I don't want to go there. So I don't have this like close relationship, but I can find it with other entrepreneurs though.
So Michael, let's dive into something you said just a little bit earlier in the last part of this conversation, where you talked about, you know, you're learning, you're running a business, you've got a family. So for an entrepreneur that's listening right now, that may be struggling with that, trying to keep everything working together. Is there anything, any piece of advice you'd give that person?
Yes. I'm obsessed with efficiency because my goal is not to get rich, but to get rich of time. So books like The 4-Hour Workweek and Atomic Habits, I read those like at least 3 times each.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I got them over here behind me.
Yeah. And the thing is, I was really intrigued by Tim Ferriss' point about that working 4 hour per week. And then a lot of people say, oh, it's just like a dream or whatever. But when I was in the financial industry, I actually applied what was in that book to start working 4 days a week, but not more hours. Literally just going from like back then it was like 37.5 hours per week. I dropped to 30. And I still got paid 37 and a half. And I told my boss, I'm not coming in on Fridays anymore, but I'm still going to bring in the numbers and you're still going to pay me. And I was able to use tactics in the book. Don't want to take too long on that. But I mean, when I did my MBA, it was every third Friday of the month. So, and I finished like top three in Montreal out of like more than 100 financial planners back then. So I went to see my director and I told her, it's like, well, I did that while being at the MBA and not working. So now you're just going to continue to pay me as you paid me. And I'm still going to deliver the numbers and nobody else has to know, but I just proved that I can do the work in less hours. So focusing on being there for my 3 children and my wife has been a priority for a long time. So first I put my family first. And then the other thing that I do is in my business, I always picture myself as, oh, what if I'm getting paid $500 an hour? Does that make sense to spend 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour? Because sometimes, most of the time, that's the problem, right? We always tell ourselves, oh, it's only like 20 minutes or it's a couple of hours. But what if 2 hours of my time is worth $1,000? Is it really worth it that I do it or should I find somebody else to do it? And by being able to delegate or to just, like these days, I'm automating a lot of my process with AI instead of just delegating. So it's making even more money out of that. But it helps me prioritize, and then I focus on 3 critical tasks per week. So if I achieve those 3 tasks in the week, anything else is gravy. And if I do more, well, good for me, good for the business, it's amazing. But if I don't, that's not a problem because the business will continue to run and to grow if I achieve those tasks. So it's really a focus on being extremely radical with the task that I need to achieve in a week, making sure that everything I do add value. If it doesn't add value, probably somebody else can do it. And the only thing that could be debatable on that is I'm still reading and responding to all my emails. Mm. But I also get a lot of feedback from my members, so I don't want to stop that. But that's pretty much the only task that is definitely taking a lot of time in my week that does not create as much value as doing a webinar, writing a campaign, marketing campaign, for example, or other like stuff that makes a lot more value for the business.
It's interesting. And for those listeners that don't know Tim Ferriss's writings, really, there's two key principles that I took out of most of his books was, you know, minimal effective dose, the MED principle, do the minimum you have to get the maximum return. And that dovetails with the Pareto principle of 80-20, which I've been practicing since I was in my early 20s. Yeah.
And even the Pareto principle, when you push it even further, you can usually achieve a kind of like a 10% of your effort is going to generate 90% of the results. And you can really, in some areas, you can push it even more than the classic 20% of efforts will give 80% of results, or 20% of your clients will give you 80% of your revenue. Yeah. It's an awesome rule. Actually, I apply it everywhere that I go.
Yeah, no, me too. Whether it's training or, you know, anything personal, it's not just a professional thing as well. Mike, we're almost out of time here, believe it or not, but a couple of things before we let you go. One is, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur, or sorry, someone that's listening that's thinking of starting a business, but just they've got an idea and they're working full time and you've done it. You did the part-time gig, you converted it to full-time. Is that the advice you'd give to someone? Would you advise them to jump right in, and things have changed since you started this, but where would you take that person?
You know, most of the time when you ask people what is the big restraint to start their business, they're going to answer, most of the time they're going to answer, oh, I don't have enough money. I don't have like this cushion where I can start. And I would say I did it on my own. Just do it. And don't wait until it's perfect. Be open about that, though, when you start. Start with, like, we often talk about the minimum viable product. So start with something small that has value, and then you go from there. First, you're going to test your idea very quickly. Because sometimes, I mean, you could work, like, 3 years on something, a service or a product, and then when you happen to launch, there's absolutely nothing happening because you kind of like miss what the customer wants. So you might as well start smaller. And again, be very transparent about it. And this is how I created Retirement Loop. At first, I came to my DSR members. I did not open publicly. I just opened to my members and say, hey, you know what? I want to build a community where we're going to help you build your retirement plan. Once you will subscribe, you will find nothing in the website. So don't be surprised. You're going to pay me up front, and it's going to be a yearly membership. So throughout the year, I'm going to give you that value. So it's a play on trust, but I mean, you're going to open the doors and the party's not started. There's no DJ, there's no food, there's absolutely nothing. So I'm going to be very clear about that. But doing it this way, I got almost 400 people that signed up. So that gave me all the resources that I needed to hire a retirement coach, plan my marketing, hire people to build the websites and everything else behind, because now I had the proof of concept. And of course, you can only do that if you have a large audience. So if you don't have this, well, start small. Today, there's absolutely no excuse. You can literally start tomorrow morning. And I'm actually trying to push my children to just start with a $10 product. Who cares? It's just, it's going to give you a lot more ideas. So the main advice is really like, start right away, start small. And, you know, when we decided to travel for 1 year, it took us about 15 months of preparation. And the way that I did was I was working my regular hours. And after that, I was spending time with my family. And at 8 p.m., when the kids were asleep, between 8 to 11 p.m., I was working on my projects because I needed a base income to leave. So the solution there, if you don't have enough money, is always work more or work harder or work smarter. But you need to generate something out of that. And that usually comes with more time and more effort, unfortunately.
Yeah, true. Hey, listen, Mike, before we let you go, where can our listeners and viewers find out more about your services?
So, I mean, you're listening to this, so I guess you like podcasts. So search for The Moose on the Loose. It's 10 minutes about the stock market, focus on Canadian investors from Monday to Friday. So bite size, very fun. I'm having just like we're doing now, no cuts, no edits, just plain contents and just ideas. And if you're interested about dividend growth investing, I suggest that you download my Dividend Income for Life guide for free at dividendstocksrock.com/income.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike, for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Pat, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.